So my ministry is twofold. It's threefold, I suppose. I teach full time as a teacher, and I run a middle school. But I also have what I call a tent ministry, which is a ministry in which I travel around and I talk about behaviour management. The other thing I do is I do workshops and presentations, mostly at theological colleges and discipleship schools, on reading the Bible a little differently. I like to encourage people to question the theology that they've been taught. I like them to look at the Bible and see what it actually says to them. And this the parable that I'm going to speak on this morning, I'm going to talk about the parable of the sower. And the reason I've chosen this one this morning is because it's a parable that started me on a journey. It's probably the first parable that I read that I realized, hang on, I can interpret this a number of different ways depending on where I am spiritually. I can be a number of different people in this parable. I can take this parable, I don't have to just read it one way and go, this is what it means. I can read this parable and go, okay, well, this is what it means for me now as I put myself in the different places. So I'm going to talk about the parable of the sower. And there are four points that I would like to make on the parable of the sower. Now, if you've studied preaching or teaching in any way, you'll go, but Derek, your sermon's supposed to have 3 points. But you've got 4 points. So I trust you. I think you can deal with the 4 points. Okay, if you can see me. But I don't know what that says tonight when I'm speaking to the younger people. I've only got 2 points in my sermon. Am I making a statement about their ability to concentrate? I don't know. Although, if we go, well, that's 4 and 2, that's 6 over the 2, so we're right, okay? So I'm averaging out at 3 points. So I do have, and I'm trialing a new PowerPoint theme. And so, yeah, that's not real. I don't know if I'll stick with that very long. Anyway, I'm going to read very quickly from the parable of the sower. I actually do most of my Bible reading off my phone now, or my iPad. Is anybody else, am I the only person? Yeah, lots of phones. You can't preach with a phone though, right? Because you can't do this with it. Okay, so if I'm going to be, it's just not the same. So I've got my floppy Bible to preach from. And I'm going to read from Luke chapter 8, verses 4 to 15. While a large crowd was gathering and people were coming to Jesus from town after town, he told this parable. A farmer went out to sow his seed. As he was scattering the seed, some fell along the path, it was trampled on, and the birds ate it up. Some fell on rocky ground, and when it came up, the plants withered because they had no moisture. Other seed fell among thorns, which grew up with it and choked the plants. Still other seed fell on good soil. It came up and yielded a crop 100 times more than was sown. And I'm just going to jump through to verse 11 where it gives the meaning. This is the meaning of the parable. The seed is the word of God. Those along the path are the ones who hear, and then the devil comes and takes away the word from their hearts so they may not believe and be saved. Those on the rocky ground are the ones who receive the word with joy when they hear it, but they have no root. They believe for a while, but in time of testing they fall away. The seed that fell among the thorns stands for those who hear, but as they go on their way, they are choked by life's worries, riches and pleasures, and they do not mature. But the seed on good soil stands for those with a noble and good heart who hear the word, retain it, and by persevering produce a crop. It's a pretty well-known story. If we've been around churches for a little while, we probably... there's a picture and the one there, so I don't have to keep turning around. Look at that. So we probably heard this story before. I've interpreted it 4 different ways, and I think 3 of those 4 interpretations are valid. One of them I don't think is so valid. But I've got 4 interpretations here I want to talk about. The first one is how I interpreted it when I was about 10. As a 10-year-old, I sat in church. My parents were pastors. My parents were officers in the Salvation Army, and then that's the church that I attend still, the Salvation Army. And so I would go to youth group Sunday school. My parents would do devotions. And whenever I heard this story, I interpreted myself as being a receiver of the word. I interpreted that the people, the authorities in my life, would throw the word out. I didn't really know what that meant, mind you, but they threw the word out. And I would receive it, and it was my responsibility as a young person growing up in the Christian way to make sure I only looked at the right things and listened to the right things and went to the right places, And it was my responsibility to make sure I read the Word and I grew in faith. And so as a 10-year-old, that was my interpretation. Now, I think that's a valid interpretation and quite insightful for a 10-year-old. I think it's actually important, incumbent upon us as people who hear the Word, to take some responsibility in our own faith journeys. This is not a spectator sport. This is something which we need to be actively involved in ourselves. It's not good enough to sit in a church and go, what's Pastor Matt got for us today? And then, you know what, that he only had 2 points in his sermon. It wasn't very good, therefore I'm not going to... You know, we have to be actively involved in our faith journey. We have to be protecting our hearts. We have to be searching the Word and growing. So that was the first interpretation. This one is the one that I think is slightly invalid. As I became an older teenager, I got used to listening to youth group leaders say things like, you have to witness. You have to witness. And I didn't really know what that meant, but I interpreted it that it was my responsibility to witness to people, put a fish sticker on my car, wear a T-shirt that says, I go to church, tell my boss I couldn't work on Sunday because I had to go to church. And in those days, in the Salvation Army, we used to do open airs. The band would go and play on a street corner, and so I'd get my cornet, and with the band, I'd go and play on the street corner, and we'd play, and then we'd go back to church. And I interpreted that my responsibility was to witness, and then people would do with it whatever they wanted. I would go and play in the open air. People could see my fish sticker. I told my boss I couldn't work. And he would accept that, and he would do with it what he wanted. It was up to him. So it was a sort of a flip of the 10-year-old interpretation, right? I figured that it was up to him and no responsibility of mine. He had free will, right? Now, I don't know about you, but if I was God, when I was creating the universe, I wouldn't have handed free will out so willy-nilly. He's like, you get free will, you get free will, everyone gets free will, right? I don't know. I'm not sure I would have done that. Because like most things God does, it's one of his greatest gifts to us, but it also takes with it the greatest risk. But as a teenager, as a 17, 18-year-old, I used that gift of free will as an excuse to say, witness and people will do with it what they will. That's their responsibility. As I got a little older, probably about the time my son was born, and I started to read and I started to question. I've always had a questioning mind. I've never really believed what people tell me straight up. I started to question a bit and I thought, hang on, good farmers till the soil, don't they? Have we got any farmers here or gardeners here? Hands up, are there no gardeners here? Yeah, we've got a couple of gardeners. Is there anybody that's worked, lived on the land? Done any farming? Yep, some farmers. Now, when you were farming, if you were planting crops, did you just get a big bag of seed and go and throw it out in the backyard and hope it looked after itself? So, like, that's not going to work, is it? Good farmers till the soil. They go out, they remove the rocks, they plough the fields, they make sure that the field is ready to take the seed. One of the things I get to do is I get to minister in third world nations. I do a lot of work in Papua New Guinea. And when I'm in Papua New Guinea and I'm talking to Papuans about, in the villages, about, they're not going to waste any seed. They're not just throwing their seeds out willy-nilly. They're going to make sure, because they just can't afford to be throwing crops away. So we till the soil. We put scarecrows up, right? Farmers put scarecrows in them to make sure the birds don't come. Or maybe in the modern, you know, I see gardens. My mother has CDs hanging in her courtyard. Apparently that keeps the birds away. I don't know. I'm not much of a gardener. But apparently the CDs keep the birds away. We do stuff to protect the crop if we're serious about farming. When I got into my mid-20s, I started to consider, you know what, if I'm going to witness, if I'm going to be effective for Christ, then I need to start protecting the crops. I need to build relationships with people so that when I plant the seed, I need to build relationships, and the building of the relationship is the planting of the seed. Right? I need to build relationships with people so that when they do make that decision, when they do go, yep, Christ, or when they find themselves naming Christ, that I can be a person that confronts things in their life that needs confronting, that I can be a person that finds them the path to getting over the issues, the blockages, to them living a John 10:10 life, a life to its fullness, a life to its abundance. And so I considered that I actually had to be better at preparing and protecting the crops. And I think this is a very valid interpretation. I think this is when I'm starting to mature in faith. Now, I'm going to tell a story now which is really quite difficult for me to tell. And I don't tell it with any pride. In fact, I tell it with some shame. But I think it's important in ministry for me to be vulnerable before my God and before you, and to tell you why I started ministering in behavior management. And this brings in the fourth interpretation. It's a warning interpretation. About 15 years ago, I was teaching at a Catholic boys' school. I was already a teacher of some promise. I'd already been a head of pastoral care at Somerville House in the city. I had already had a reputation for being able to achieve things in the classroom that other teachers couldn't. And I was teaching at this boys' school with about 2,000 boys from a range of socioeconomic situations. And I had a grade 8 music class. I was the music specialist there. And there was a grade 8 music class who had decided there were a few tough boys in it, boys who were given scholarships because they'd been kicked out of every other school. And one of them had decided he was going to push my buttons. And he worked very hard at pushing my buttons. And one day, he found the button. One day, he found the on switch. And I have a classically trained voice, and when I raise my voice, I can peel the paint off the walls. I'm not a big man, but I can make a big noise. And as this young boy stood in front of me, being a smart aleck, I exploded all over him. I lost my temper. And I unleashed on this boy. And halfway through my rant, I noticed that this tough gang boy, this tough gang kid, had been reduced to a sniveling little boy. He was just a scared little boy. And I saw a fear in his eyes that I never want to see in a child's face again. I saw a fear in the eyes of the boys around him, which made me realize that I had become something that I didn't want to be. I got them out of the space. I went to my office, my desk, and I wept. And I confessed and I repented. I ensured that the school held me accountable for my actions. I went to the deputy principal. I told them what happened. I insisted that I got a letter of warning for inappropriate behaviour. To this day, I'm pretty sure now, having spoken to the principal, that the letter he gave me, he wrote up, but he actually never recorded anything, you know. But it made me feel better at the time, right? I spoke to the parents. The parents didn't complain. They actually didn't care when I spoke to them. But I called them in. I apologised. And I made a decision then and there that while I had anything to do with it, while I had any control over any situation, no child would ever feel that way again, especially as a result of my actions. And I went back to this parable. And I read this parable again. And I went, hang on. My actions can be the stony ground. My actions can be the birds that steal. My actions can be the weeds that grow up and choke a child or a new Christian. And I never considered this parable like this before. And it made me consider when at other times, in what else that I did, was I being those things that are barriers to other people living the life that Christ wants them to live? It's no good for me to witness and to till the soil and protect the crop if I'm then just going to do something which burns it down or steals or chokes. And this isn't just the case for children. This isn't just the case for those of us that work with children. If you're in the workplace and you're trying to represent Christ to the people around you, what are they seeing? If you were to be held accountable, if you were to be arrested today and put on trial for being a follower of Christ, what would the evidence say? Would you be convicted? Would the evidence be overwhelming? Or would the judge just say, you know what, there's an indication here, but there's not enough evidence to overturn, there's not enough evidence to convict? Because I think as Christians we have a choice. Sometimes one of the things I love to do is do guest lectures at Christian teachers' colleges, universities and things. And when I stand in front of young teachers, young Christian teachers, I say this. Because I'll say to them, why are you becoming a teacher? And they say, I want to make a difference in the world. And I go, excellent, here's my promise to you. You will make a difference. My promise to every single one of you is that you will make a difference. The question is, will it be a positive difference or a negative difference? There is no such thing as neutral living in the spiritual world. There is no such thing as being neutral in the way you live your life. If you have a fish sticker on your car, if you wear a What Would Jesus Do band, if your friends know that you go to church, if the people in your street know that you go to church, if the people in your work know that you go to church, if you say to your boss, sorry, I can't work Sunday morning because I've got to go to church, every single thing you do helps them make a decision as to whether or not they want what you've got or not. Every single thing. Every single action. So, are your actions those which protect the crop, or are your actions and attitudes those which are choking the crop? Sometimes then, I don't think it's necessarily about being perfect. I'm not saying you have to live a perfect life. Okay, don't misinterpret me here. Should you try? Yeah, of course you should. But what I'm saying is that you will make mistakes. We're all going to make mistakes. Every morning, every day, I pray for that young boy who I stood in front of. Every day. And this is an issue for me, because my God says to me, Derek, I forgave you for that a long time ago. But every day I ask forgiveness for that. Every day I pray that that young man found somebody else who could be better than I was that day. And when I ask for forgiveness, God forgives and forgets, but He asked me not to forget so that I don't make the same mistake again. He asked me not to forget so that I am better every day. And when you make mistakes, it's okay. But have the grace, have the spiritual strength to apologize for them. You will see lives changed if you can apologize sometimes. People will say, people don't expect you to be perfect unless you pretend to be perfect. People don't expect you to be perfect unless you try and tell them that you are. if you are open and vulnerable before people and before your God, they will care, they will understand. And when you make the mistakes and you apologize for it, they will go, I want what? That takes strength. There is a confidence about that person. I want what that person's got. There's an old saying, I think it was Francis of Assisi that said, everywhere you go, preach the gospel. When you need to, use words. Now, maybe the church historians can tell me, I'm pretty sure it was Francis of Assisi. It might have been someone else. Everywhere you go, preach the gospel when you need to use words. I love that saying. It's a saying that I live by. However, let me say this. Too many Christians use it as an excuse. Again, it's one of these things which has a great truth, but a great risk. Live your life. Don't overuse words, but don't be afraid to use them when you have to. Don't use that as an excuse. Don't walk away from an idea to share your heart or to tell someone you care or to ask someone if you can pray for them or to say you're sorry by saying, oh, you know what? Francis of Assisi said I should only have to use words when I have to. Maybe that was a time when you had to. We can, because here's the part of the warning, we can be the birds and the weeds and the stony ground by the things we do and say. We can be the birds and the stony ground and the weeds by the things we don't do and say. The opportunities that we let go. The moments that we don't take. Now, this is not a... let me just take a break for a moment and say this is not an opportunity. I'm not trying to guilt trip you this morning. This is not about everybody go back over your last week and tally all the times. That's not what this is about. But it is about how can we be better? How can the people of this community know that this is a place where they can come to find solace and refreshment? My heritage is Salvation Army. Are there any other people with Salvation Army heritage? Because often Baptist churches have a sprinkling of Salvationists. Yep, we've got a few up the back here. The Salvation Army used to call its buildings citadels. This is talking, if you've been around churches for a while, you might have heard of the term the Salvation Army citadel. We don't call it that so much anymore. And while I'm all for change, I love the new direction the Salvation's coming in with some modernising of music and worship services and things like that. I wish we still called our buildings citadels. Because do you know what a citadel is? A citadel is a place that a soldier goes to find refreshment, to find rest, to have their wounds healed so they can go back into the battle. Wouldn't it be great if your community considered this place a citadel? A place where they could come to find refreshing, to find their wounds healed and tended to, so they could go back out into the battle. So this morning, this warning was for me. This is part of my history, and it's affected who I have become. This is not about me trying to guilt trip you into doing things better during the week. But it is about just asking you to reflect on who you are and ask the question of yourself, which one of those places am I at the moment? Which one of those four interpretations holds true for me right now? Are you still in the stage where you're just trying to figure out your own faith and being the best person you can be? Do you passively witness? And tonight I'm going to talk about the difference between boldness and love. I'm going to talk about the difference between having a fish sticker on your car and doing something about it. Do you till the soil of the people around you and protect the crop? And are you conscious that sometimes the things that you do can be the very things which push people away? And are you guarding yourself against that? Consider which one of those four places you stand this morning, where you sit this morning. Do business with your God. Come before your God and ask Him, what is it? Where do I fit in that? And what do I need to do to be better for you this morning?